Jason, quick
you
question.
You are one of one.
Three-time Wisconsin Sports Writer of the Year.
Help me understand a little bit more clearly what you're asking.
Did you ever hear it called Don't Go Jason Waterfalls?
Is this Matt Hamilton?
I say that so helplessly, but like, I feel like
it. Desperate sound in your voice.
Yeah. I am.
Jason Wilde. He's on Jim, Matt, and Molly's takeover of Wilde and Tausch. What's up with that? What's up with that?
What's up with that? What's up with that? Ooh, what's up with that? 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 That is Jason Wilde's theme music on Jim, Matt, and Molly when he joins the show. But this is his show. It is Wilde and Tausch. It is the Jim, Matt, and Molly takeover of Wilde and Tausch. Matt Hamilton, Olympic gold medalist. I am Jim Rutledge, Molly Brown with you. And we are in the Everlight Solar Studio with primetime Wollersheim. And I was informed, Jason, that you were at least listening a little bit to the last segment here. And Evan Cohen joined us earlier. And if you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on the new ESPN Wisconsin app. But he prompted us to ask the question that if you went to a barber in Wisconsin and asked for a LaFleur, would they know what it is? So, because that was Evan's biggest takeaway, that Matt LaFleur won the weekend because he had great hair and looked fantastic at our trio houses. So, Wilde, welcome, and your thoughts on Evan Cohen's take on the beauty of Matt LaFleur.
Well, I just I'm not going to comment on who won or lost the weekend based on their hair, because definitely I'd be a big loser on that one.
Same.
Especially since when we said I looked at some of the pictures that were taken of our Q&A session with LaFleur, and multiple times they caught me with this look of like, you know, indignation, like, you, what are you talking about, kind of a face, which I don't think I was actually making based on what he was saying, but nevertheless, I'm glad they got his good side. I wish they would have gotten my good side, which would have, I think, been from the back. But here's the thing that's crazy. So Tom Brady mentioned this on one of the broadcasts, and I can't believe that he said this. LaFleur's going to start going to these production meetings and just stand mute. Because remember, there was the story during the playoff game against San Francisco that he said that when Anders Carlson trots out into the field, he prays.
Yep.
Which he said in jest, but Tom Rinaldi took it as gospel and reported it. And by the way, he may have said it in jest, but there's always a little bit of truth to a joke. then there was the one about Dontavian Wicks, where he told Buck and Aikman flat out, don't say this on the air, but he reminds me a lot of Davante Adams. And of course, Buck and Aikman said it on the air. So then this past season, he talked to Brady at some point and informed Brady, who is a well-groomed, well-coiffed fellow, that he spends $100 a week on his appearance. And Brady told that story on the air. So I believe he is shelling out $100 a week. So I heard Molly say that he's getting his hair cut every few days. I'm guessing, and to your point, Jim, they do have an on-staff barber. They started doing that when they realized that they needed to be more thoughtful of African-American players because there weren't a lot of African-American barbers in the greater Green Bay area when I started covering the team in 96. And there's more now, and this is a different city than it was 25 years ago or 30 years ago when I started covering the team. But I am sure that his guy is, I don't know all the hip phrases that you guys were discussing in terms of appearance, but he gets tightened up or whatever it might be on a weekly basis.
Speaking of the city of Green Bay.
It's lined up.
It is lined up.
Yeah, I heard you say that, but I don't believe you. And when's the last time you were lined up, by the way?
You're the least lined up on the show.
Yeah, he's just quoting Josh DiMaggio, who did text in, who will take Josh's word
and
for it.
And I'm also like, I don't live under a rock.
You didn't say it earlier. I'm giving credit to Josh DiMaggio.
Josh DiMaggio brought it to our attention, but he's right. That's the way you say it now.
No, you live under a curling stone.
Waka waka.
Hey, I love Fozzie Bear now. Come on.
Jason, you mentioned the city of Green Bay. How do you think that they showed out this weekend for the NFL draft?
Well, I'm not a business owner, but apparently, as I've been reading this morning in our various Green Bay outlets, The business owners are pissed because this was a very much a local event. And I said that with affinity and respect and pride of our fellow Wisconsinites and of Packers fans. But I think the local business owners feel like they were sold a bill of goods, that there were going to be, you know, these thousands upon thousands of people coming in from out of the greater Wisconsin area, and they were going to have this great economic impact. I believe it was sold as $20 million for the Green Bay area and $94 million for the state, and I don't think that materialized. I think as I watched, you know, you mentioned being at the Tundra Trio. As I watched fans go by that corridor, it was 80-85% Packers fans in green and gold. Certainly there were fans of every team that came past, but I found myself wondering during the telecast, did ESPN and NFL Network really have to strain to find fans of each of the 31 other teams to show on television? So I know that they had done – I'm a big fan of the food truck. Although my favorite food truck with Ashton Rotman and Rot's Hots has retired with his hot dogs. But I love those. I love supporting those. There's a couple of them at the Green Bay Farmers Market every week. Apparently they did like a food truck like area downtown with a bunch of them. And nobody went to downtown Green Bay. Maybe you were staying at the hotels down there and stopped and grabbed a bite, but I was just watching something on WBAY up here. Like, there's all these business owners who are like, that we either got no bump or we actually lost money because we extra staffed expecting it. So from that perspective, that's not a reflection of Packers fans and Wisconsinites. That's a reflection of there weren't that many people that said, hey, you know where I want to go in April for the NFL draft? I want to fly to Green Bay, Wisconsin. So it was a dominantly Wisconsin folks that could drive and spend the day here. And from that perspective, they showed out amazingly. I mean, to have that 600,000 number, now again, if Matt Hamilton was one of them and he went all 3 days, he counts as three people. But still, that number is a gigantic number considering that the population of the city of Green Bay is 107,000. Then you've got DePere and Howard and all the little suburbs. But still, really impressive. But the business owners, I don't think, are overly happy.
Well, and I did hear, I think, was it Molly and someone else was saying, I think Ryan, that they stopped asking people to count in for the draft, too. So that 600,000, how many of those are unique? To your point of businesses, what kind of boom do they get? How many of those visitors at some point were no longer unique, that it was someone who came up multiple days, or, you know, they stopped counting people coming into the draft after a while, and so that number could be inflated, like when you go to a stadium and they go, oh, it's a sellout, and it's like, well, I can see it's 90% sold out. But I'm not surprised that it's a very regional one. I'm not surprised Wisconsin fans showed up to fill it, but I'm also not surprised that people are like, you said flying to Green Bay, that's only if you have a private jet. I had multiple players that I talked to that said that, like, even if they were in this draft, they wouldn't come because what a pain in the butt it would be to get there. And then when you get a fly into Milwaukee, then you probably still would drive up to Green Bay and drive back because the hotels can be more affordable. So Green Bay was never built to truly hold 600,000. 600,000 coming in and out makes a lot of sense, and that's why I think it worked so well, is that there wasn't 600,000 people there. It was 600,000 people, mostly from maybe probably 90% Wisconsin, a little bit Illinois, and a little bit Minnesota, and that's why it worked. So in the long run, and honestly, best case scenario, because if 600,000 people actually tried to come to Green Bay, it would have been an abject nightmare.
Yeah, and I noticed on a couple of levels. First of all, my traffic snarls were non-existent. Like, I thought they were going to, and I left a couple times because Paul and the girls were down in Madison for a gymnastics meet. So I had to come home and take the dogs out and feed the cat, you know, all those important jobs that I have. And so I would do our show, come home, and then drive back later in the day. And not once, like, I put in Google Maps, not once was the time in red. Not once. I have a buddy who has two kids that are on Maddie's track team, and he drives Uber for, like, extra money. And he did have Pac-Man Jones for 2 days.
Oh.
But, you know, Pac-Man let him, you know, he's like, well, I don't know if it was like that movie Collateral where Jamie Foxx drives Tom Hanks around. I mean, Tom Hanks has other Tom Cruise has other activities planned that night.
Yeah.
But he had other, he took other fares too. He said he was really disappointed with how many Uber drive or like how many drives he did. So again, I don't want to take away from the fact that the crowd shots looked amazing. But I was a lot like Brian Gutekunst, and he and I don't always agree, but we both took in the draft the same way. We went into Lambeau Field. We did our jobs. He picked people. I wrote about them. And then that was it. Like, my exposure to the campus was looking out the window or looking at the television. I did not... And Paula was giving me a hard time for not even walking around to see it, but like, I was too busy writing the Baron Sorrell life story. I just had other stuff to do.
And I want to talk about him and Golden, some draft gold that was not necessarily planned by the Packers, but we'll do that on the other side because Ryan's yelling at me that we have just ruined the clock. So we'll come back, talk more.
Well, it fits right in on this time slot.
Well, and speaking of fit right in, to the angry folks on social media, we'll stop talking about the city of Green Bay and haircuts. We'll get deep into football knowledge next on X's Wilde and Tausch, the Jim Matt and Molly Takeover.
This is Wilde and Tausch, driven by Zimbrick Chevrolet in Sun Prairie on 100.5 ESPN. See their full inventory at ZimbrickChevrolet.com.
Wilde and Tausch, the Jim Matt and Molly Takeover. We are presented by Coors Light. The Mountains are blue, you know what to do.
And that's Crush a Coors Light.
That's Molly Brown and Matt Hamilton. You can see us on the ESPN Madison YouTube stream. And Primetime Aura Shine behind the glass. We're in the Everlight Solar Studio. We do have Jason Wilde for a little bit longer, up until 11 o'clock basically here on Wilde and Tausch. And Jason, you know, your fans expect hardcore football talks, so no more... Talk about Green Bay and the city. No more
Have they not
haircuts.
Listened to our show? Are they not familiar with Mark Gerald Tauscher?
Look, I'll tell you what. The best thing that's happened to your show is us doing it because you got a lot of people just mad.
Yeah, they want you back.
Yes.
We're glad you joined us. Cause
yes. Yes.
Cause there's riots out on the street right now.
Yeah. So this show is known as a bastion for only Packers talk, strict hardcore Packers talk. So I want to ask the question. I just thought the actual Packers draft from your perspective, Wilde, between Matthew Golden and Baron Sorrell, those two stories were fantastic. And I believe it was I listened to a lot of post-draft podcasts. I believe it was an Athletic podcast that Dane Brugler was saying that when he talked to players from Texas, it's a common question. You say, hey, you could take one guy with you to the NFL. The answer for every single Texas player was Baron Sorrell. And so, and obviously Matthew Golden got him as well. So I'll let you talk about... The talent is still TBD. I actually think if I'm betting on the two guys to contribute this year from this draft, I would bet on Golden and Sorrell more than anyone else. But also, they're great stories and seem like fun people to be around.
Yeah, so LaFleur said the same thing, that they had a couple of different guys in from Texas and that he likes to ask that question, and that was the answer that he got. And so, you know, like you could see from our interaction with Baron that there's a passion there. You can see why teammates would gravitate to him. I'm working on a story for Channel 3000, and you guys know me. I'm kind of a touchy-feely type. But look, there's so many measurables, right, for athleticism, even though Goody, before the draft, claimed he doesn't
really. We did a whole thing on this.
What's an RAS score? Well, we have our own version of that. So you do it.
Jason, that was so... We did a whole like segment on how condescending it was. Because he acted like he didn't know what RAS was. And then he described, essentially, they just have RAS with their own initials on it.
Yeah. And I mean, and considering it was my question, I was somewhat irritated by that.
I would be too, yeah.
Because, look, there are guys that have really... And in fact, Isaiah Simmons is another one of those guys with a gigantic... RAS score. That Goody cares about that. Call it whatever you want, but he cares about that. But my point is that there's all those ways to measure athleticism, for one. There's obviously, when you look at film, you can see what a player does in his production. What you cannot measure is dedication of the game, love of the game, and the ability to get through adversity. And, you know, I'm probably obnoxious about this as a parent, but I talk about it with the girls all the time because you're going to deal with adversity. You know, you're not going to get the score you want at a gymnastics meet. You're going to miss shots in basketball. You're going to, you know, have a race and track where you don't run at the speed or hit the height you're expecting in pole vaulting. How do you deal with that? Because you don't want your failures to beat you twice. And when Goody was talking about that, it really resonated with me because I do think, you know, finding out what people are made of and how they handle adversity. Look, I hate to pick on this guy, but like Romeo Dobbs, yes, after what he did last year, like if I'm the Packers, I know he made a mistake. And I'm not saying you should be crucified for mistakes, but that sets off an enormous alarm bell for me of how's this guy going to deal with adversity again? Because last time he didn't show up for work. Mm-hmm. And that's not what I never had seen that in the NFL. I've seen people hold out for contracts and stuff, but I've never seen someone who was so unhappy with their role that they not only didn't come to work, they didn't tell anyone they weren't coming to work. And of course, what happens? I saw Matt Steinman of The Athletic went through all of the pictures that were posted by Evan Siegel, the Packers photographer, from the first day of in-person off-season program. And he pointed out that Romeo Dobbs wasn't in any of those pictures. Now, I don't know what's going on with Romeo Dobbs. Romeo Dobbs might have, you know, his wife might be having another baby. He might have a sick relative, whatever it might be. But because of what happened, of course I think, wonder if he's just unhappy that they've drafted more wide receivers, mm-hmm, right? Whether that's fair or not, that is where your brain goes. And so my point is that I am fascinated by this angle, and I want to talk to some more guys about it because he said it about Golden. He said it about Sorrell. He said it about another guy, too. And I think that is really crucial to whether a guy succeeds in the NFL. Maybe not as much as his athleticism or his on-field production, but it is a puzzle piece. And so I kept hearing Goody, and you guys know I asked him about this before the draft, about does this guy love the game? And we all know that there are guys that play football because they're good at it, not because they love it. So those are all parts of figuring out, will this guy succeed or not?
And Jason, just going off of the voluntary workouts, I did see that Christian Watson was not at practice. However, he was in the building, which I thought, mm-hmm, was interesting. What do you think, and I know that you're not in the business of predicting things, but what do you think that this wide receiver room is going to look like this season?
I love that I have this reputation now where people say that. Tausch always says that.
I know you don't make predictions.
Look.
Fair.
It's undeniably fair. I'm not saying it's not fair. I just love that now.
He says he loves it.
We put that caveat out there, yeah, before we even bother to ask.
We know you won't answer the question, but let's give you a jumping off point.
You know, that's the best part of it is that's like the polite way to say, I know your answer is going to kind of suck because you're going to refuse to answer it, but
no,
would you try?
Not at all.
With all due respect.
No. Yeah, that's another one. Yeah, that's exactly what
no
it
offense,
is.
But.
I mean, yes. I could just another be like, hey, one. Jason, spin us a yarn. like, so who you want?
I would say this is, I don't want to speak for Matt LaFleur, but I think their hope is that Christian Watson comes back in November, has some production, but doesn't like have a stretch, and as much as it would help their team in 2025, like if he were to have a stretch like he had during that three-game window of his rookie year, remember that, where he had like 7 touchdowns in like 4 games or something insane? Like, I think they would love for him to be back and contribute and help them win, but not go off so they could sign him to a 1-year deal for the 2026 season. Because he doesn't have much of a market coming off the ACL, and then they could keep him. Again, I don't know what's going to happen, but if he doesn't come back until mid-November, that is not great for his free agent marketability. I don't think they're bringing back Romeo Dobbs. I think they're going to say, hey, man, go out there and ball out, and you can make yourself a ton of money, but it ain't going to be from us. So, you know, get your together and play well. I still think that they believe that both Wicks and Reed can be special. Now, they have to stop dropping the football, and the fact both of them drop more passes individually than the Eagles did as an entire team has to change. But I will support my guy Wicks by saying he had one game where he dropped three balls in one game. But in the second half of the season, if you check his drop numbers, in the last like eight games, he didn't drop a pass. So I look for guys that fix the things they're doing wrong, and that is an encouraging sign from him. On the flip side, I like Jaden Reed a lot as a player and as a dude. Not as huge of a fan of the pizza that he endorses. I don't think it's very good. It's a frozen pizza. I'm more of a Palermo's guy. But you can't disappear to the degree that he did down the stretch. I mean, he was a non-factor down the stretch. They cannot have that happen again.
So, Jason, in this draft, the Packers, obviously, wide receiver heavy in the first three rounds. Is there a maybe not a player, but like a position group you think that they should have addressed more heavily? Like cornerback, waited till the seventh round to finally take a DB.
Yeah. Yeah, so I wrote about that on Channel 3000, and I think I'm going to try and finish answering Molly's question because I could see by her face that I didn't really answer it. You know, I don't know how big of a role Golden is going to have, right? Like, you get drafted in the first round, the expectation is you contribute significantly right away, and I think that's fair. I don't know what to make of Savion Williams. Like, if we're going to, I think it's very dangerous to compare him to Cordarrelle Patterson and Deebo Samuel when he hasn't played a snap in the NFL yet. But he does have a diversified skill set that I think Matt LaFleur is going to be excited about utilizing. But again, I don't know how that's all going to shake out, and I'm not in the business of making predictions. Now, to answer Matt's question, which I am mesmerized by your hair today. It looks like it's amazing. It's got so much body. It's so full.
Who has better hair, Matt Hamilton or Matt LaFleur?
Matt Hamilton.
Oh, let's go.
And there's more of it, too.
Well, that Jason, that's my whole thing is that, like, Matt's just the LaFleur cut is a cut that, like, 70% of Packer fans can't have. And, like, if you have the thick hair to be able to grow out, like Scalzo when he grew his hair out, Matt Hamilton, if you have the ability
Molly
to
Brown.
Grow out, Molly Brown, but yes. as a guy, if you have the ability to grow out thick hair that looks good, mm-hmm. like, that's what I'm jealous of, because the LaFleur cut, I feel like 45, or I would say, I don't know, every 45-year-old plus guy with hair can get that haircut.
Yeah, I'm starting to thin up top, so I can't do that. I did do, and by the way, didn't we promise the YouTube dwellers we weren't going to talk about hair, and now
yeah.
I brought us back to that.
But I had to just get that take out there, because that's what's impressed about Matt's hair, is just the sheer volume of it, as someone who lacks volume in hair.
Yeah, I did grow out my hair when Paula said that I would look so stupid if I shaved my head when she was going through chemo, when she was dealing with breast cancer, that I said, okay, then I'm going to grow it out, and it, I mean... It was, that was not, she was rightfully embarrassed. I said, well, you should have let me shave my head then. But to your point about the way the draft fell, I do believe Goody when he said on Friday, and I didn't expect to be up here talking to you about two wide receivers. And maybe he didn't expect to be even talking about one, right? But he takes Golden on night one and then Savion Williams on night two. And to me, that, and I did a story on this on Channel 3000 too. Like, if you look at how the draft fell at corner, right? I mean, the Michigan kid, Will Johnson, with the knee issues, fell all the way to 47. There were two first round corners and only three second round corners. And then there were nine corners in the third round, okay? So this was not a great top of the corner class draft. On top of that, the guy that the Packers had in for a visit, Revell, who played at East Carolina, who they, I think, really liked, but he's coming off an ACL, he went 76th, and they took, at 87, Savion Williams. And on top of that, they discussed Savion Williams at 54 in the second round when they took Anthony Belton, the behemoth offensive lineman. And so... again, I don't want to speak for Goody, but when you have a guy that you think about taking in the second round and he's still there in the third round, regardless of the position, if you thought that highly of him to take him 30 picks earlier, then you take him when you have the chance in the third round.
And I agree with that philosophy. My team did that too, and I think if you get the guy. The one thing so Goody said during the offseason that this was there's urgency this offseason. And – Then I look at their free agency. They didn't do a lot to help the team. So obviously this believes the Packers are doing a lot of reheating their own nachos here. They believe their own hype and all their players are going to get better because they got a new defensive line coach. Because when I look at this roster or at this draft class, I would bet on Golden and Sorrell as the two guys who will contribute year one. Belton is, I think, a good pick. I don't know anything about Oliver, Brinson, Robinson, or Williams. They very well could be good future players and future replacements. Mm-hmm. But as far as who's going to help the team next season, I see two guys, and I pull up The Athletic, and I did a I asked you know, ChatGPT to do a composite of all the Packers' grades, and it came out to a B, but The Athletic gave him a C+, and the line, or excuse me, The Ringer gave him a C+, and the line that I thought best encompassed the whole thing was, although this is a fine haul for the Pack, I'm not sure it's a group that will put the team over the top, and I'll add the caveat of next year. So I don't have any great takes on all these players outside of I think Sorrell and Golden will contribute right away, but it seems like they didn't pick a lot of guys that are going to help this team be better next season. They could all help in a few years, which is important, but the Packers, I thought, were trying to go win the Super Bowl this year, and their free agent moves and their draft says, we just think we'll coach them better and we'll be better next year.
Well, certainly the defensive line, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they did take three guys. Yep. They were all on day three. But they did take three guys. And I think the hope with Brinson is that he can be the T.J. Slayton. Plug him in for Slayton. You know, T.J. he was a good run defender. He was a knucklehead, right? I mean, he had that critical penalty in the playoff game. Like, I don't think that they were ever going to re-sign him. But you're right. Like, is Sorrell going to be a guy that's going to get, like, six sacks for them? Probably not, right? I mean, yeah. But look, in fairness to Goody, if you invest, you have four first-round picks in your defensive line rotation, right? Kenny Clark, Devontae Wyatt, Rashawn Gary, and LVN, who our fans tell us is not good enough to even deserve a nickname. but look, LVN is not one of my guys. I don't know him. The conversations that we have had, they're very like surface level. Like I love the guys that really like open up and give you insight both into who they are and to football. Like every time I talk to Xavier McKinney, I feel like I'm smarter. That's how I felt when I was around like Woodson. When I talk to LVN, I feel it's transactional. Like I needed to say this and I did it and now I'm done. So I don't want to hold that against him, but I haven't seen anything from him that gives me this incredible hope that he's going to explode in year three. Now, in fairness to him, though, he did play with a broken thumb all last year. They lined him up on the right side because of it all the time, which means he's going against the left tackle. So maybe that did factor in. Or maybe they just missed on him and should have taken Will McDonald, who grew up in Milwaukee and played at Iowa State and had 10.5 sacks for the Jets two picks later after they took LVN a couple years ago. So, but they, Goody put his draft picks where his mouth was. Mm-hmm. He said he believed they had the guys in the building to generate a pass rush. And based on how he drafted at the top in the first 2 days, he didn't reach for anybody at that spot, and he didn't reach for anybody at corner. So you could say he was true to his draft board, but he also did not reach to try and get guys in positions that he needed.
And Jason, I know you got to go. I just want to say this: like last year,
you
I believe,
guys need to go. Well, I got plenty of time. I was supposed to be on the air for these.
Well,
three
I was
hours.
Told you had to be a hard out at 11, is what Ryan told me. But
hold on, Jason, you asked me in the talkback, could I be out by 11?
Yeah, that's not a hard out.
Oh,
that's a reality of being on this show. Like you say 11, and then you stay till like 11:05, and then you're not pissed off. But go ahead.
So I want to follow up on this. Like last year, I believe the talk from Goody was like, we like all our receivers. Like we have a good group. Maybe we have four ones. We have a bunch of guys. So are we going to be sitting here next year, and the Packers are going to be spending a lot of draft capital on the D line, saying, we were wrong on the D line?
Yeah, probably. Right. I mean, Rashawn Gary has not lived up to, what was it, $96 million they gave him?
Yeah, and then he's drafted something high, ridiculous. Too. Like, so high draft capital and cash.
Right, and I don't have anything against him per se, but, like, those are the expectations that come with being a high pick who then gets a high-dollar second contract. And the fact that he has never had a double-digit sack season, like, I mean, he's Clay Matthews has lapped him in terms of production and impact, right? Mm-hmm. And yes, he tore his ACL in Detroit a few years ago. I get it. I'm not trying to pick on him, but you need to do more. And I would hope that Rashawn Gary, when he looks in the mirror, says the same thing to himself. Hey, I got to do more. I got to be more proud. I got to find a way. I can't. And I don't want to hear, oh, well, look at how many times he was right there and the quarterback got rid of the ball. Yeah, that happens. I'm sure that happens to Myles Garrett and Max Crosby, too.
Yeah.
But they also get to the guy before he throws it more. So, look, that group needs to rise up. We all saw it from Philadelphia. How much more diversified and creative you can be with your defense if your front four can generate pressure without having to bring simulated fire zone pressures and all the other stuff that Jeff Hafley had to do. And again, kudos to Jeff Hafley, because as Matt LaFleur has said multiple times, I think he said it when we were on stage with him at the Tundra Trio on Thursday as well, like, they went in with one plan for their defense, and they ran a defense that was not what they planned. And to me, that is the mark of a really good coach, and that's what Jeff Hafley did. He adjusted to his personnel. He adjusted to the shortcomings, and their defense ended up in the top 10 in both yards and scoring, which is pretty remarkable considering how disappointing their pass rush was from their front four.
Well, Jason, can I ask you a question since we have you until 11:05?
No, absolutely not.
Netflix released the preview for the Favre movie, and good Lord, just reading the captions, I can't wait to watch this. So wrap it up quick, because I got to see this. It seems like a takedown. I'm excited.
Okay. Well, I just had one question for you, Jason. So Adam Schefter joined Unsportsmanlike this morning, where he said following this draft for the Packers that he believes that there's more of a chance that Jair Alexander will be returning to the Packers this next season. What are your thoughts on that?
Molly, I love you. I am so sick of this topic.
I know, but I had to ask.
No, I understand. You're doing your job. I get it. Here's why. Because for some reason, all the reporting that has been out there on this, some of it mine, some of it Rob Domofsky's, some of it Tom Silverstein's, has been very consistent, which is they do not intend to bring him back.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He doesn't want to be back. They don't want him back. And then, you know, LaFleur mentioned that he took part in the Zoom calls that were the first week of the off-season program. And then I got people saying, oh, I think he's coming back. Look, I'm not saying it's a 0% chance that he's going to be back on this team. But I think you have to trust what you're hearing. And this is the phrase I keep saying. Look, I understand there are fans that want him back. You know who else wants him back? Me. I like covering him. Mm-hmm. We have a great relationship. I've told that story about how he came up with the quote for the back of Sydney's basketball team's T-shirts that I made. I like covering him. I'm one of the few guys he trusts in the locker room. There's about three of us. Domofsky, Matt Schneidman, and me, I think, are the three that he talks to regularly. So, of course, I want him back. I am not trying to run him out of town. But, again, you saw Brian Gutekunst and the frustration he had. You definitely saw the frustration that Matt LaFleur had. And you saw it with David Bakhtiari. This is David Bakhtiari 2.0. What they don't want are guys that they don't know if they're going to play from week to week. And whether that's fair or not, I would say it's not. But that's how they think. And so I still don't expect him back. Now, I did not get a text back from Matt LaFleur, because I did want to know, was Jair there in person? I don't want to just rely on Matt Schneidman going through all those pictures from Evan Siegel. But the fact that he's not in a single picture leads me to believe that he's not there in person, and that they probably agreed between John Thornton, his agent, and the Packers, hey, until we figure this out, you know, you don't have to come. It's voluntary. Maybe they even said, we'll still pay your workout bonus so you're not getting cheated out of money. But I think in the end, they're still going to move on from him. Now, if Adam has changed his tune, I would say this about Adam. Adam is not just throwing spaghetti against the wall. So I'm assuming that he had a conversation with Jair's agent and said, and maybe the conversation was, well, you know, I think they're warming up to the idea. I will leave you with this, and I've said this a couple times. I talked to someone who works in the building like a month and a half ago, And they were like, hey, Jason, he can still play. He's still a really good player. And I said, when he plays. And the guy said, you're right. You're right. I said, look, I get it. There is talent there. He's still only 28 years old. But it's pretty clear that people are pretty frustrated. Don't forget how they felt when he wasn't available. And I still think that thing in Chicago where he played 10 snaps and took himself out after saying he could go after warming up before the game at Soldier Field. Maybe they're conveniently forgetting that, but I know there were a lot of people in that building that were really pissed off about that.
Jason, we'll let you finally go on that note. We appreciate your time.
Well, now I can't wait to hear about this Brett Favre
go watch it.
Takedown. Is it out already?
So, no, the preview was just released. Maybe Ryan can send you. I sent it to the Jim, Matt, and Molly because we're going to play the audio for it because captions.
I got some work to do. I'll just listen to the show.
There you go. Yeah, you can listen to the show. We're going to play the audio. We're going to play the captions and do all that for you for the preview of the Netflix movie around Brett Favre. I saw parts of he thought he could do whatever he wants. He seemed out of control. And I'm like, oh, I gotta watch this preview because maybe finally someone will reveal maybe who Brett Favre was with the Green Bay Packers. This is Jim, Matt, and Molly. We are presented by Coors Light.
Your state, your teams, your ESPN. The ESPN Wisconsin app. Customizable just to you. Find the ESPN Wisconsin app in the Apple or Android app stores today.